This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 199 of the USEA's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford. The USEA announced this week that Equiratings Quality Indexes will now be available for all USEA registered horses who have competed in the last 5 years. In the spring of 2017, the USEA had announced a new partnership with Equiratings, and now 8 months later, following negotiations with the Irish-based company, the ERQI system will allow USEA members to track and monitor risk in a tangible way. The USEA is, of course, committed to safety, and this partnership with Equiratings will ensure continuing assessment of the performance data. By providing every horse with an ERQI, riders will have a visual indicator of risk at a specific level, and in 2018, the ERQI will be used solely as an advisory tool. The USEA has no requirement at this time for a horse to have a green ERQI to enter an event at the level in question. The ERQI should be treated as a guideline, and the USEA strongly recommends that riders use the ERQI and all the other tools at your disposal to make safe and informed decisions. And to learn more about Equiratings, I'm joined now by Sam Watson, who is the founder and director, and Dan Byrne, who is the managing director. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Chris.
Well, first of all, Dan, let's start with you and tell us a little bit of background to how Equiratings got started. What's its story?
Well, the Equiratings story is 3 years old this year, so we probably... Well, I mean, we've been friends since we were 12, Sam, I think is fair. We were in boarding school together, Chris, and then we ended up living together in university. Then again, after that, I went down the commercial law route from university, and Sam, who was top of his class and generally an all-star student in maths and stats and databases, decided to turn down all the jobs in the big fancy banks and went back eventing. So he brought back to eventing a great skill set, which we're now seeing being put to use. But I joined him a couple of years later. So 2015 or 2014, we decided we had an opportunity here. And in 2015, then I left my job and moved in with Sam and two new babies and his wife, Hannah. And from a side office, and two laptops and a table tennis table, we got started. And that was the real beginning of it. But it's been a long and interesting journey since then, and pleased to say now we've a couple of offices and we're working across four sports and in 10 to 12 countries. We've six or seven people on the team, but this is what we're working on and going to be talking about today has been the real focus of the business and the cornerstone of the business as we got started, and that's all the work we've done around risk.
Okay, well, Sam, let's bring you in here. Tell us a little bit about the original concept to this then and why you thought this was a cracking idea.
Well, I suppose it started, Chris, with just the interest that I had in the sport and being a rider as well. And my background with stats and analytics and that sort of stuff, also with one eye on trying to get to Olympic Games and things like that many years ago, I started to just analyze performance of guys at the top level. That led to a lot of what is now our high performance offering. But the interesting thing is, as we started prediction variables and metrics, it was just catching our eye that a lot of the poor performance was at the opposite end of the scale as well. So as much as it's been easy enough to predict Michael Young winning events, there were trends, and I think that's the thing to take from it as well, is that this is about management. Same as in any sport, you're always going to get the turn up for the books where the bookmakers get it wrong. But all in all, if you have metrics behind what you're doing in sport, which is worldwide now, you can start to make marginal gains, whether that's trying to improve your performance at the top end or what we have in this sport, and actually in all horse sports really, is this concept of risk management. whereby you're trying to manage that risk at the lower end, because it affects individuals. It affects, obviously, in eventing, it affects riders, because the consequences of a bad fall are extremely high. It affects horses, so the horse welfare, horses get injured in falls too. So we've got to manage both of those. And it affects the sport globally as well. Our place in the Olympic Games as a sport, we've got to manage that. We've got to manage the optics and our ability to grow as well. I think our biggest events worldwide, when you think of Kentucky and you think of badminton and Burley, they're also events that carry the highest risk as well. So that's what we are now seeking to do, is to really manage that.
Well, Dom, when you looked at the original, you know, opportunities here, how did you decide on the systems, on the algorithms, the metrics that you've discussed just now? We know what was it that was painting a picture for you that you knew that you had to focus on to make this work in the early days?
From a risk point of view, Chris, everything, of course, was focused around the cross-country phase. We've done an awful lot of analysis around the other two phases. When we're working in high performance, for example, we really recognize that there are five key areas that can make up that final score. And breaking up each of those areas and analyzing each of those areas is what presents marginal gains. Now, when you do that in risk, you've got to really focus on the cross-country phase. And for a sport like eventing, which is so data rich, there's a huge amount of information that comes just even from the performance data, even from the results, being able to break up all the different types of faults that can occur. And of course, when you look at this just over one competition, there's a huge opportunity or a huge chance that there will be chance variation that will arise. You know, the programs and analysis that we run doesn't necessarily say that the horses which, you know, appear in the bottom ratings or which are statistically carrying higher levels of risk, the program doesn't suggest for a moment that those are the horses that are going to fall or those are the horses that are not going to complete. What the program is allowing you to do is to focus on that bottom 1-2% of the field. And it allows you, say, on the day, it would allow for TAs, so for your ground jury, for example, to be able to perhaps have more eyes on those people or to build more information around those rounds. But really, if we're looking at it in a micro sense, we would say anything can happen on the day in one sense because of you're dealing with such a small field. When you begin to look at the system over a year, or as we're doing, when you be able to look at the system over 5 to 10 years in multiple countries, then the analysis begins to point you in very, very clear directions. So while it can look a little bit muddy just on a field of 50, 60, when you begin to see it over tens of thousands of results, a very clear picture begins to arise. And the really key message is that the past performance of a horse helps you predict the future performance of a horse. The past data footprint, so all those results together that are currently sitting alongside your horse, that really gives a picture on what we can expect to happen next and what level of risk those horses are operating at all the different levels.
Well, Sam, clearly, you know, over the time you've been doing this, we've seen that need, that demand for data analysis, not least of all because of the risk management aspect of our sport. Talk a little bit about this from a rider's perspective and what you've learned and how you've helped this from a rider's perspective to develop the program and the data that you're now able to provide.
Well, I love it from a high performance point of view. I think accountability is one thing that really lacks in this sport. It's a kind of a trait of a lot of the horse sports, really, because it is so in its core, there's a lot of feel and a lot of intuition about it. But those were also words that were used when scouts were buying baseball players for millions of dollars. You know, they would say, I just haven't got a good feeling about this guy. And actually, as much as that can be successful and the scouts had so much information in their own kind of personal databases up in their minds that they were making good calls a lot of the time, you can't beat the raw facts. And I've used that myself a lot to help my training and to become more accountable and to be sharper in my training. You know, there's a lot of things I could spend hours and hours every week trying to improve my dressage penalties by, you know, my averages might come down by 0.5 or maybe a full penalty over the course of a season, try and make a gain there, but put in a lot of hours to do it. Or I could actually just be honest with myself and say that, God, I'm probably only doing, you know, 5 hours of cross-country training per month. And whereas I'm doing 5 hours of dressage training nearly per day. So if I changed all that, I could get some much, much bigger gains on my overall stats. So it's helped from that point of view. I think riders should look at themselves a little bit more analytically. And I think the challenge for us then has been to take what is such a complex sport as well from a data point of view. You know, we're talking about some people preparing for 4 stars using 2-star competitions, sometimes at national level, how all that data interacts, the huge variance that you can get from this side of the water. We've got, you know, badminton from 1 year to the next has probably been the event in recent years which has fluctuated the most, from that really wet badminton back in 2014 to slightly nicer conditions then in 2015. And you know, you see the variance in competitions. A 4-star isn't necessarily just a 4-star every time. So how the data needs to, a machine has got to digest that. And a lot of sports still use humans to do that. They still will, you know, get a handicapper, as you have in racing, to just give their expert opinion on how they felt the conditions were that day. Because we like the challenge of it, but we also feel it is right for this type of a system as well. If we're going to be part of governing who gets to compete and who doesn't, that is hard facts. That is based purely on analytics and purely based on facts. And we would not be implementing a system unless there was clear evidence there to suggest that it is the right thing to do. It is the right way to manage the sport.
Dom, let's just explain, if you will, to USEA members what they need to know about the statistics that you're analysing, the data information that you will be providing. Just unpack that for us a little, would you?
I think a couple of really key points around this, Chris. The first would be it's going to be an advisory system in the USEA in 2018. So lots of nations are beginning to apply the analysis that we're doing differently, and we would encourage that. The USEA are implying this as a guideline for 2018, and we will see what learnings we take from that. Essentially, a lot of the underlying data, so the data going into the algorithms, is the results from the national competitions. It stretches across all the levels of the sport, and the reasoning behind that is that every single run impacts on what we call your data footprint. So a horse who is competing at 100s is actually helping build a profile of what their risk would be like at the level above. And you can see that, you see that across all the levels, you see that across nationals and internationals. But the raw data flowing into the algorithms is performance results. What comes out of the algorithms is a risk rating, and that's a probability between, so it will appear in our systems as a number between 0 and 1, with 1 being very good probabilities or likelihood of or low risk, you know. So clear rounds would be associated with that number closer to 1 or what you would be expecting. So to give you an example of that, if you're talking about a horse, let's say Cambalda and Jenny Brannigan, to give you an example, if you go and look at their records, you'll see that up until Ocala at the end of the 2017 season, they were on a run of 28 cross-country jumping clears in a row. And that was mainly at the 2 and 3 star levels and a lot of 3 star level. So if you were to apply a risk rating to a horse like Cambalda at the lower levels, you would be expecting to see a number very close to 1, so 0.8, 0.9s. And that's based on that data footprint that we're talking about, that collection of results, that past historic group of results attaching to that horse. if you were to apply that, then that same horse and that same data footprint, you're to apply that to 4-star, well, the rating would come down a little bit because you're the algorithms are taking into account, okay, we've never seen Kambalda at a 4-star yet. What do we know about 4-star? Well, we know that the risk is going to go up. So the system is constantly telling us, and this is a system that is, you know, designed, obviously built by an event rider and statisticians around them, but it is a system. So we're able to see that it affects the different levels. There will not, I understand, be a number displayed in the USEA in 2018. It's actually going to be the color code. So we'll have greens, which will be in that top bracket. Then it will move to ambers and yellows and then reds. And what are we learning from each of those? They're sitting somewhere on the scale. And if you're in a red zone, it is not for a second suggesting this horse is going to fall, or this horse is not going to complete, or this horse is going to pick up penalties. What it's telling you is, based on your data footprint, based on your collection of results, this horse is operating at a higher level of risk than if it was perhaps at a level below where you would see that risk decrease slightly. So the color would potentially go to an amber or a green at a lower level. So you'll see a number of different ratings because, as you can imagine, Chris, every horse has a different risk rating at every level of the sport. So we can't tell if a USEA member is going to enter at a lower level, an 80s, 90s, 100s, or whether they're going to enter at a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star level. So what we do is we provide a rating for every horse at every level of the sport. Now that's regardless of qualifications. So you would see that a new horse would almost always be red, probably from 1-star and 2-star upwards, just because the system hasn't got any information to base it on at all. And then, you know, some clear rounds for that horse as they move through the grades, you'll begin to see those colors begin to turn into the greens. But again, as Sam has mentioned, all based on very factual information, based on the performance results of the horse up to that point. And this year, I understand it'll be displayed in a color code format in USEA.
Well, finally, Sam, what else would you like our members to understand about what Equa Ratings can do for them?
Well, I think I'll elaborate a little bit still while we're on the risk, because it's going to be a new thing that comes in. We've had a quantity control system in the past, and that people need their qualifications in order to upgrade. This is going to be a more of a quality control, so that a level of performance is maintained. What I would say to people is that we have spent years analyzing this and making sure that the big picture, that it works, and everyone will have that their own reasons behind why results have happened. I've had, you know, those unlucky 20s. I had one very bizarre fall off a horse in Tattersalls this year where he must have spooked or something as he was jumping the fence, and I was literally just running along the ground beside him on my feet as he went one way. And I could, you know, I can digest my own reasons as to why things have happened. And if I find myself in an amber zone or a, you know, lower down on those risk ratings, I think that to be objective and look at this and say, it's not saying that I am a bad rider or my horse is a dangerous horse. It's just saying that the big picture, it's probably the equivalent in driving of saying there's a little bit of ice on the roads. You know, people drive with ice on the roads successfully, but there will come to a point, there'll come a level whereby when we're trying to govern a sport that is extremely high risk, just the number, I never realized just how high risk we are. When you think that we're having a fatality, one in about 10,500 international results, one in every 10,000, one in every 10,500 international results, compared to say aviation, which is one in every 11 million passengers getting on a plane, we're just so high risk. And so we have to do something. And if you're getting into that catchment area, it's not personal. Get on top of it early. There's nothing wrong with dropping down a level to put in a clear round. Think about it as well. Don't just take the don't get on the back foot on the defensive, because we've all done that, and I've done that myself in the past. I've looked back and thought, well, that horse had a good few 20s, but he was never unsafe. If he was in a bad spot, he'd stop. He wouldn't jump. So I actually thought he was safer. But the thing is, this is about big picture management. So we have to do something. We're in a position whereby we have to manage this, and this is a solution that has a lot of gains. And unfortunately, we've had fatalities in this sport whereby the data footprint going into it has had a lot of question marks over it. So there's don't get me wrong, there's the other side of it as well. And I would also absolutely stress that, you know, if you've got a green rating, we talked about Kambalda, there's loads of horses out there at all levels. And the reality is, and it's, I think it's important to say it, is that you are never safe in this sport. You know, you get on a horse and you go down to cross country to jump those obstacles. You know, you've got your own risk management to do yourselves, and that's going to be in your training. We hope this system will really promote more training as well. We hope that we are promoting the message that good performance leads to lower levels of risk. And we want everybody to think about that. You know, that's the message we want to come through. And as for our other services, you know, we hope we'll be keeping you entertained at the events. It's a much more lighthearted side of it. And don't confuse the equity readings, you know, the picking horses, who's going to win at events and things like that. You know, that's the fun side of it.
So we can turn to you for predictions then, Sam. Well, Dom, any further thoughts that you would like to add?
No, I think it's a great opportunity for us to be able to show the system in the US. It's worked very successfully in Ireland. We're working very hard behind the scenes with the FEI. We're about to see it launched in Britain. We've a big body of people working to try and make this happen, and there's a huge amount of safety initiatives going on in the sport that we would support hugely. So all the work around frangibles, air jackets, learning how to fall, I think there's a lot of people working very hard in the sport to minimize the risk, and this is just the number side of it. And of course we would contend a crucial side to understand the numbers.
Well, clearly a very important service. I want to thank you both, Dan Byrne and Sam Watson, for joining us here and telling us more about equi ratings and for your support of the USCA. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on the programme.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
And you can find more information about equi ratings on the website at useventing.com. And to keep up with all the latest news and information from the USCA, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And if you're listening to this episode on the website, you can also download it from iTunes to any podcast player so you can take it with you. And you'll also find the other 198 episodes of the USCA's official podcast too, so there's plenty to listen to. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with more news and interviews from the USCA. Until then, thank you for listening and enjoy your eventing.